You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 22nd of August. Japanese inflation data came out earlier this morning. Year on year, 3.1%, down from 3.3%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Pooja Tanna from Perpetua Investment Managers. Jackson Hole kicks off today. And then, of course, we've got FOMCs and MPCs in some 3 or 4 weeks. How's that all going to play out? Keith McLachlan, Element Investment Managers. Spur results. I mean, really top spur results. But also a lesson to be learned. Once upon a time, it was all about famous brands. And now it is about spur. How do investors navigate that? And thoughts for me and car insurance. Important. We need it if we have a car. But how can we manage those costs? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb chasing 3%, understanding the inflation target debate. Great article by Casey Sprake at Anchor. Advocates see alignment with global norms, fiscal gains, lower rates, but critics are worried about growth sacrifices, administrated prices, and political discord. Business Day, PPC sells a $30 million Zimbabwean land sale deal. Cement makers Arlington Estate had been seized in land grabs, but title deed was returned last year. Now they've sold it. It's about 30 or 40 cents per PPC share. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P down 0.4%, NASDAQ 0.5% lower. In the East, it is mostly green, Sydney the exception, down 0.2%. Tokyo is green, but only a few points, 0.01% higher. Hong Kong 0.4% up and Tencent 1.6% higher. Commodities are mixed, gold futures weaker, 3,377, Brent 67.59, platinum 1,351, and palladium a couple of dollars down at 1,100. 119. The rand is 1772. Bitcoin 113,200. And top 40 opening call at red open 185 points or 0.2% to the downside.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Pooja Tanna, Perpetua Investment Managers. Pooja, appreciate the early morning time. Jackson Hole kicks off today, this afternoon, our time in the US, running through today and tomorrow. Really interesting topic, labor markets and transition, demographics, productivity, and macroeconomic policy. I suspect, however, that really the interest is going to be Jerome Powell's speech, what he says around rates, where they're seeing that, and perhaps even sort of the corridor discussions around central bank independence. Is there anything in particular that you're looking to stand out, or is that really what most of the focus is going to be?
Morning, Simon. Yes. Okay. So all eyes on Powell as we wait for his speech today, which is around 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. The focus is going to be the guidance on the path for interest rates, because we know there's a lot of pressure by Trump to cut aggressively.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, there's quite a complicated chess game being played out with the Fed's Board of Governors. But be that as it may, if you look at the recent Fed minutes, the committee remains divided, mm-hmm. right? Do you cushion the labor market weakness, which would imply weaker growth? Now, remember, that's one of their mandates.
Yeah.
Or do you wait and assess realized impact, like realized inflation from tariff impact? So will Powell maintain his cautious stance on inflation? Or does he indicate a more aggressive, deeper rate cutting cycle than already priced by the market? Remember, the market is already pricing in 5 rate cuts in total into next year, right? So I don't think he will lock it in. He's not going to lock in this rate cut in September. He'll probably suggest that economic data has weakened enough to support consideration of a rate cut. Now, do we think there's going to be a rate cut in September? Look, if you look at all the data, if you see where inflation has printed, the previous inflation was, I think the core CPI was at 3.1% year on year. Mm-hmm. And given what we know about the jobs market, we know that it's printed weaker. It would or should not come as a surprise if the Fed cuts in September. So markets already priced this in. So really the risk is that he does not cut. But I don't see a scenario where he doesn't cut. The data is quite benign. But remember, we've got a second round. We've still got a second round of employment data and inflation coming out before then. So
yeah. that's just it. I mean, it's the data that we, there's still data to come, and that's a great point. I mean, I think it's the 17th is FOMC. We will have more data. We'll get a better sense there. The central bank independence story, I mean, is this something that you and I perhaps talk around a whole bunch more, but perhaps maybe not so much at Jackson Hole, notwithstanding the importance? And I mean, it blows my mind that we're talking, you know, worrying about Federal Reserve independence, but I mean, here we are.
I know. Look, I think for today, the focus will be on the interest rate path.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right that it's actually quite concerning what's happening there. I mean, if I just look at what's happening, he's already, if he ousts Cook, you know, we've got, he's then going to have or try and secure 4 seats out of the 7. And then remember, Powell's chairmanship expires in May next year. Mm-hmm. But his governorship continues until 2028. So the question is, does he grit his teeth and stay to preserve the independence of the central bank? Because if he goes, then there's 5 seats up for grabs, you know, for Trump to put nominees in. So look, it's actually quite concerning. And if you look at the current 2 nominees that are on the seat at the moment, the 2 people that he has on the board, they have been advocating for interest rate cuts. I mean, given that there's very good reasons why they should be interest rate cuts, and they've been arguing that the data has been benign or neutral, so you should be cutting interest rates. But the fact of the matter is they have been advocating for it. Those are the only 2 that have been advocating for it. So yeah, it is quite concerning, Simon. I wouldn't say it would. I mean, it's something we're all looking and we're watching to see what happens in that space.
Yeah, what's that Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times. I would like some boring sometimes. Let's move to MPC. It's still a ways away. It's the day after the FOMC. That is on the 18th. The reason I raise it is we had the inflation. You know, our inflation has been, what, high 2s, 3%, and then suddenly a 3.5. I appreciate a lot of that was food. But if the SARB is now anchoring at 3%, and I use the anchoring rather than the targeting, so we don't get into that bun fight, I mean, we're surely getting a pause. I mean, technically, I mean, they would, I imagine they're going to discuss a raise, but I can't see them doing that.
Oh, no, they won't discuss it. I don't think they're going to discuss a raise. Look, inflation printed at 3.5%, but you need to remember it was in line with expectations. Mm. You know, we could see that food inflation had blipped up. And if you look at it, the administered prices had lifted to about 7% from 5.9% in June, which is really your electricity tariffs and then your hikes in water, refuse and property assessment rates. And we know this has all been playing out, right? So if we do think, I see the ceiling sort of between 3.8 and 3.9% into year end. I don't see, and also food inflation, we're already seeing the easing of price pressures there, right? Mm. So I don't see a major concern. I don't think it breaches 4% by the end of the year. We know the newly telegraphed anchor is at 3%, which means, yes, I agree, there's going to be a pause. I think you get a pause in September and you get a pause in November again. So I don't think you get any interest rate cuts this year. However, mm-hmm. I don't think they'll be talking about interest rate hikes. I don't think that's on the cards.
Okay.
I think the pause is definitely there. I mean, but we knew this, right? When he telegraphed the 3%, we knew that interest rate cuts coming, for future interest rate cuts were always going to be problematic because he's now going to be looking at 3%.
Yeah, absolutely. I take your point. We knew that. And I suppose as long as they're not even talking about interest rate rises, we can like the 3% inflation. We can grit our teeth for now. We'll leave it there. It's Pooja Tanna, Perpetua Investment Managers. Appreciate the early morning insights. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan, Element Investment Managers. Keith, appreciate the early morning spur results. I mean, just top draw numbers, growing revenue. Although I noticed their foot traffic was flattish, but they were getting more spend per head. They also were opening a lot new stores across their various different brands. This really is, in what must be a very, very tough operating environment, a star operator and doing brilliantly well.
Good morning, Simon. Absolutely. What you missed was perhaps the one real surprise that they hiked the dividend significantly. I mean, dividend up 40%, and they're still not even paying out all their earnings. I mean, the dividend payout ratio is about, they're paying out 3 Rand per share, and they earned about 3 Rand 40. But the short answer is these are really good numbers. They're backed by cash flow. Mm-hmm. Spurs sticking to its knitting steadily growing the store base. They've really got about 60% of their earnings coming from their core brand being Spur. Mm-hmm. The rest, you can see some are working, some are not working as well as others. But this is a hit and miss strategy in the QSR sit down and casual dining space. But I think Spur's doing really, really well. And new management team's really driving that energy and taking Spur forward for the next decade or two.
You make a great point there where you in the QSR and the casual diner, you need to try things and there's no guarantee of success. You just, I suppose, you try it carefully and that's what matters. And some will then, you know, become giant brands within their own right. Others will quietly fade away.
Definitely. I mean, if you look at their direct competitor with roughly about double their market cap, it's Famous Brands. Mm. Famous Brands has obviously got Steers, but it's also got Debonairs and it's got the range, Wimpy and a range of others. Famous Brands is a far more diversified portfolio of brands, albeit it's doing worse. Mm. So diversification isn't always going to save you. And Spur's definitely more concentrated portfolio, but their core brand Spur is doing really, really well and absolutely dominates in the family casual dining space. And I think that's very key, and they're well represented across the three let's call them events, mm-hmm. Being breakfast, lunch, and supper. So really, in the center, Spur's doing very, very well.
I want to touch on Famous Brands in a moment. Quick last question on Spur. Notwithstanding a 7% plus move yesterday, this is not an expensive stock. It's a PE of around 11. It's a dividend yield of around 9. I mean, you know, a balance sheet with incredible strength on it. They are not expensive, even after that huge move.
No, not at all. I mean, you look offshore and you look historically at these sorts of companies, and they tend to trade on quite high multiples because it's actually quite hard to get a franchisee network of critical mass spinning up. Mm-hmm. And once you do, what you get is fantastic returns on capital. I mean, Spur's got a 30% return on equity. It spits cash that's fully backed by cash, and the reason they're paying out so much of their earnings as a dividend despite the growth is because they are net cash balance sheet, so they're not even geared. So absolutely, it is not an expensive stock, and I mean, equivalently valued to Famous Brands at this point in the cycle, but Famous Brands is in quite a different position with quite different brands and quite a different balance sheet that's net debt. So no, in my opinion, hardly expensive even after the run.
Famous Brands, this was a stock, and if I go back, I was going to say a decade, truthfully more than that, probably 15 years or back sort of, I don't know, 2010-ish. It was Famous Brands was a stock you and I would talk around often. I held it. I think you held it at the time as well. It was the clear better of the two. And things have changed. And that, to me, I mean, it's the wake-up call for investors that, you know, even bottom-drawer stocks, although we can debate if Famous Brands was, a stock you're holding, you need to keep a close eye on it. Famous Brands did their misadventures in the UK. A whole lot's gone wrong for them. And Spurs now the better of the two. And you've got to be able to make that transition, which is not easy.
Certainly. I mean, if you go back into the S&P 500 for the last century, only of the original constituents, only about 5 stocks remain. That's a 1% hit ratio or surviving over 100 years. Not all businesses are worth holding forever, no matter how nice the little truisms that, you know, various investors say that sound cute. Mm. And Famous Brands is a good example of that. I mean, you go back, and I feel like it's 5 years ago, but actually it was about 10 years ago they bought a gourmet kitchen in the UK. And that was the peak for Famous Brands. They've taken a lot of debt. It was an awful acquisition. They had to unwind it. They've still got to pay back the debt. And that slowed down the investment on their network in South Africa because the capital was starved. And all of these things, unwound against them, because Famous Brands, Spur was always run quite conservatively, net cash balance, slower grower, focused on returns and capital. Famous Brands was run with a net debt balance sheet, higher operating leverage, higher financial leverage, and all of that, when it's working in a faster growing environment where you're getting faster volumes and you're acquisitive, can look like fantastic growth until it goes backwards. And then all higher operating leverage, higher financial leverage, all of those things going against you, you go through a really bad trough. And Famous Brands has been through that. I do feel they've come out the other side. But quietly, what's happened in the background is a new management team has taken Spur forward. Mm-hmm. And I think they're out-competing Famous Brands, although they're smaller.
Yeah.
They're out-competing in the spaces they play. And that's notable, and that's able to be done with a much more comfortable balance sheet as well.
Yeah, I like your point there. Leverage is great, but it cuts both ways. It's great when it's working. It's a horror when it's not. It was 2016 that Famous Brands was almost 150 rand. It is now 58 rand. Keith McLachlan, Element Investment Managers, always appreciate the early morning insights. Our poll today is around Spur. Stock up almost 8% yesterday, but that doesn't make it expensive. It still is offering value, a chunky dividend yield, a low double-digit price earnings. Do you hold it? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Some thoughts from me around car insurance. I mean, if you've got a car, you need to insure it. You can get clever in some places and say just third party, fire and theft, not comprehensive. My worry is always that I crash into a Lamborghini and that's going to cost me a ton. So I do the full comprehensive. But there still are ways we can sort of try and get that price down. We need the insurance, but insurance is largely all the same. So then it becomes the price party. And the first trick is, and we all know this, call your insurer once a year and just ask them to drop the rate. Invariably they do. You can go and get a competing rate to sort of help prod them along in a sense, but I find you don't even need that competing rate. You just phone them and say, hey, I'm looking at my budget and this is a big line item and isn't there something that you can do? And I think they've always said to me, sure, not always a big cut, but they cut it down. But there are others we can do. You've got the excess. That's the amount that you have to pay before the insurance kicks in. And you can increase that excess and hence reduce the monthly premium. The point then is, can you manage, don't take the excess to 10,000 and then when you need to pay it, you don't have the 10,000. You need to have that emergency fund so that you can manage that excess. But that certainly is one way where you can, by pushing it higher, you can reduce the monthly payments. They also add a whole lot of bells and whistles. For example, if your car is being repaired, they will give you a rental car. I mean, that's nice, I suppose, no lacquer, but I can Uber, I could use my wife's car. Do I need that rental car? And the short answer is, I've said no, I don't want that bell and whistle deducted from the policy. And again, it saves you a bit. Not a huge amount, but it certainly does save you a little bit there. So it's worth going and reading that small print, particularly on all those extras. The extras sound great. They seem like fun, but do you really need them? And is it bang for buck? You need to, in the case of the car hire, you need to have an accident. The car needs to be out of commission. Then you get the rental. You can just catch an Uber. And remember, insurance, as I said up top, is not about loyalty. It's about service. It's about having your product insured. And then ultimately, it comes to price. So if you don't get good rates from your current insurer, do shop around and find one who does offer a better rate. Chatting with Pierre Radenhuis yesterday, he of course from Herenia Capital Advisors. He is short the top 40 after that recent run higher, and we asked you if you were short the top 40. He's also long Sasol, and that trade certainly is finally working. But on the top 40, we asked if you were short. Around 40% said no. You're long always. You don't do shorting of indices. A third said yes, it had got well ahead of itself. The rest were saying nope, I am still loving my longs. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.